Thank you for joining Manners and Other Matters, the podcast which brings you all the insights you need to navigate the intricate world of modern manners and elegant living. I'm your host, Louise Percy, and I'm delighted to be your guide on this journey towards a more refined and gracious way of life. I'm here to share my knowledge and insights with you, and I will also be bringing in a lineup of experts from the worlds of etiquette and elegant living to share their wisdom and experiences. The art of etiquette isn't just about following a set of rigid, traditional rules. It's about fostering meaningful relationships, both in your personal and professional life. Whether you're dining with colleagues, entertaining guests, or simply striving for a more elegant lifestyle. Subscribe to Manners and Other Matters today, and let's explore the world of etiquette, manners, and the pursuit of elegance together. Welcome back to Manners and Other Matters. Today, I have a really interesting subject for you. I've been walking along the beach during my holiday break here in Australia with a friend I've known for 20 years, and she's had grief in her life. And during one of our walks along the beach some time ago, we talked about it, and she gave me the option to perhaps talk with her about the etiquette of grief for those grieving and for those assisting those to grieve. And so today that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the modern etiquette of grieving, what you do, what you don't do, but not from any overall etiquette perspective. I'm actually going to be talking about this from somebody's perspective, and everybody's perspective is always going to be different. And so I'd like you to meet my friend Michelle Ebbs. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Louise.
So we have been walking along the beach up here at Gilderton, Western Australia for many years together, and you very kindly suggested this as a subject, and I thought it was so relevant because people don't know what to do at times with grief. But before we go into the subject matter, why don't you tell me a bit about you?
Okay, well, I'm a newly retired professional person. I had a family of three, and I had a very happy life until the sudden death of my child, my son. 2 months prior to him passing, my husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So it was a real double whammy. And so that happened 14 years ago. And subsequently, I've had both my sisters die. And yeah, so I've sort of experienced a grief firsthand and the devastation that that can cause a person. And the reason I reached out to you was because I thought it was interesting at the time of, particularly this time of my son's death, how people reacted. And it was, yeah, it was fascinating to see how they reacted to me, displayed their grief. And it wasn't always, I didn't think, appropriate, but I was always tried to be generous and just, you know, allow them to do what they wanted. But I thought it was interesting, and hence that's why I sort of thought it might be a good topic.
It's a great topic, and you're really generous offering your time to talk with me about it, and I really appreciate it. But for our listeners, not only are we going to be talking about Michelle's experience and her takeaways from it, but we're also going to be talking, so stay listening to the end of the episode, about the choices that she's made and why she's the fabulously happy, wonderful person that she is today, how she actually chose to change those circumstances or to take them into her personality and change them in her own way. So please stay listening. But now I'm going to kick off with a few questions, if that's okay, because right. I think that's a nice way for us to do it. So Given the fact that your son was how old at the time?
My son was 25, and he died in a car accident just close to our home, which meant that I had to drive past that spot every day and still do. So, yeah, it was very sudden. In fact, it was my 50th birthday scheduled for the Saturday, which was December 5th, and he died on Sunday, the 29th of November. So all my preparations, all my plans were converted mm-hmm. into planning a wake. So it was quite bizarre. There was a lot of bizarre things, but anyway.
But you came through it with your natural, if I can actually use the word, elegance, because you probably don't necessarily see yourself as elegant, but the way that you react to other people is actually what I would consider very, very elegant. So in that situation where you, I mean, obviously had the 50th, but more importantly, your son's death, how can friends best offer their emotional support to a grieving family member now that you've got all these years to look back on it?
Look, you know, I think it's really hard. You can't be too judgmental about people, I suppose. But for me, I had a core group of friends who just surrounded me with love, would come to my home and really not say anything to me, but they would bring food and they were there to help, you know, clean, do dishes, whatever. And then, you know, in terms of planning the funeral, I had a very good friend who helped out with, you know, the music. You know, it's very important. You only get one go at a funeral. And it's really, really important if you want it to be the way that I wanted it to be, authentic. So I wanted to have it, you know, because he's such a young person, to have it in respect for how he would choose music or that sort of thing. I'll give you another example. The Thursday before the funeral on the Friday, that dear friend who coordinated the music gave up a massage appointment that she had with this a naturopath that lives locally in the hills where I am, of Perth. And it was like a little miracle because I wanted to speak at my son's funeral and I just really didn't know how I was going to do it, but I really wanted to do it. And I went to this woman I hadn't been to before and I told her that. I said, how can I do this? She said, Michelle, you just have to breathe. And it was profound. And that's what I did. And I was able to do that. And for me, that meant a lot. So I'm very grateful for the friend who gave up the appointment and the knowledge that that person had to be able to share with me how I could get through that moment of absolute devastation.
And that probably leads me on to the next question is, are there specific phrases or words that have been particularly comforting all those years ago? Were there some things you'd like to hear? And maybe, let's be fair, some things you didn't want to hear.
Well, I think, you know, it's a pretty general response that people will say, you know, your time will heal. And at the time, you know, your heart's broken and it never heals. But I think time allows you to cope better. And particularly if you have other children, I think it's your duty to enable them to have a happy life. That's how I saw it. So phrases, look, I love you. You know, I feel for you. I'm devastated for you. I'm not sorry for you, because what does sorry mean? I don't really understand what sorry means. But authentically, if a person feels for you, and there were many, many people who love my son that really were devastated and for our family. And, yeah, so it's a hard one. You know, and another thing that happened, one of my close friends came. I remember her coming that first week and I sat on the steps and cried and cried and cried, and I hadn't cried until it was after the funeral, and she said nothing. So it's a very personal thing, isn't it? But I think before you say, a hug might be better than words, if that's appropriate.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's what those of us who are seeing someone grieving as deeply as you obviously were at the time, I think sometimes we're going to go back to the traditional comments, you know, oh gosh, I offer you my condolences, or I'm so sorry, or you unexpectedly come around bearing a casserole at a time when you don't want to see people. They think they're doing the right thing for you, but you don't want it.
And that is hard, because I worked at a university And I had, you know, people come with food in the first couple of days, and it was amazing, but was also overwhelming.
Yeah, that's interesting, huh?
Yeah, anyway.
You know, in your experience, what types of practical assistance are most important? I mean, you're a great cook. You didn't need casserole. So.
Well, no, I didn't want to cook, though, obviously. And I think people just coming and being in your house and doing the vacuuming, because obviously your house is full of flowers and there's people coming and going, so it's wonderful for someone to be making cups of tea, that I didn't have to worry about any of that. Someone was, you know, as basic as cleaning your bathroom just to make sure that everything was perfect for your visitors as you'd want it to be. That was just fantastic.
And we're going to go back to that, but I just want to throw in something completely different because it's very new. How do you feel about people sharing their grief about your loss on social media?
Look, I think that's just part of life now. So my mother's 87 and she always is upset that there aren't funeral notices in the newspaper anymore. How do people know people have died? Well, they do it by social media. So I think that's just part of life, and I'm not precious about things like that. You know, I was looking after my own family. If people needed to know, which they did, and I was overwhelmed by people sending me notes and attending his funeral, people I didn't know. So that was very comforting to know that he was loved, because at the base of it, you want your child, you want people to know that he was loved, you know, when he leaves the world, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And are there topics, Michelle, are there topics or questions that friends should avoid when discussing the person you've lost?
I think people have to be careful about privacy of the circumstances around the person that's died. It was very difficult for us because our son left our home driving in a way he shouldn't have, and he crashed into a tree and died at the spot, just a little garden centre down the road from us. And we then got contacted by people who saw him driving and told us that he was driving erratically and so on. And that was really hard to hear. I'm being very honest. That was really something, because I knew that it wasn't right, but it was very confronting to have others know details that, you know, because amazingly people just pulled off the road to go and look. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So I think, you know, privacy of the details, if you want to share with someone, you can, but if you don't, people shouldn't ask. Mm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Mm. And to this day, I think, you know, I've never ever said anything other than making words a hope of appropriate condolence about the loss of your son. I've never been interested in the details. That's entirely, you know, your son died.
You can't change anything, Louise. You know, that's happened. Mm-mm. What's the point? Yeah.
I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit, because you not only have the situation where you lost your son, but obviously your husband is also having some health problems which are causing life changes for you all.
Massive life changes.
Yeah. So I'm going to say, can you throw it out there and give some people some advice? What are some common challenges or frustrations that families face in terms of social interaction once you've either had the death of a loved one or, you know, in your circumstance?
Can I just share with you, you know, my life totally changed in all ways when my husband was diagnosed, and or even just on his level. My husband and I are very close. I was married at 20. You know, I did eventually build a career, but I had children very young. And we had a very good marriage and we loved each other. And the diagnosis of Parkinson's totally changed my life. It impacts everything, because the person in front of you is slowly dying from a brain disease. That is a whole talk on its own, the challenges of that and living with that.
And it's grieving, Michelle.
Very, very sad. Very, very sad. And compounded with not having the support, you know, I said my sister died. So my sister was run over in Darwin about 4 years after my son died. Now, I remember sitting at the computer thinking, I've got to book flights for my elderly mother. I've got to coordinate my children getting there. I've got to organise other guests. I had to organise a bus to get people in and out from where she lived, a place called Humpty Doo. I had to organise the funeral.
Can I just interrupt for a moment? Humpty Doo, for our listeners from, I have about 25 countries people listen to from, can you tell us Humpty Doo is a real name of a place in Australia?
It is. It is. And segue, I actually went on the Britannia, the Queen's ship, and we went down to the locker rooms, and this is in Scotland, and there was a sticker from Humpty Doo.
So it does
exist. It's a place. Anyway, yeah, so I remember sitting there and just thinking, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. But, of course, I had to rally and I had to do it. But I had a husband who, anyone knows any symptoms of Parkinson's, anxiety is major. So I didn't have his support, and I don't have his support emotionally, and I haven't had that for a long time. And when you've been with someone for 44 years, you know, for 30 years, I was very much used to that. So, you know, sad.
Michelle, after all of those circumstances and the time that's elapsed since your son died and your husband was diagnosed, you have made decisions in your life about how to go forward. Would you like to share them with us, please?
I think there's been a number of times when I've had to re-look at how I manage my life and my attitude to life. So I don't think it ever stops with one epiphany. I think you have a number of epiphanies. And recently, for example, I had a major anxiety attack, which I've never had in my whole life, but I just knew I had to leave home because my husband was, his condition was upsetting me. So I jumped in that motorhome of mine and got away for a few days, which was very important for me. And I'm very, very blessed and lucky to be able to do that. I came home realizing that I needed to change the way that I looked at how I managed and interacted with my husband. And I had to accept that things were the way they were, which is obviously much easier said than done. But I thought, if I pretend that I'm on my own in the house, so I'm single, anything he does for me then will be a bonus. And we have a list in our house where I put all the things up that need to happen. We've got a very large garden and requires quite a bit of work.
Can I interrupt here? For my listeners, when she says we have quite a nice garden, we're talking an estate garden with the most beautiful roses. It's in the Perth Hills. So Michelle and her husband can grow basically anything there, and it is an absolute sanctuary for people and birds, by the way.
Certainly my sanctuary, my sanity. So, and I felt much happier making that decision because he can't help what's happening to him. So I need to man up and just, you know, do things. I retired this year because I nursed my younger sister at home. She wanted to die in my garden, and that happened. So I retired because I just couldn't cope anymore with working at that level. I didn't want to. So it was a good decision to try and make more peace in my life, because I believe that you choose happy. You can choose life too, that's fine. But if you choose happy, then you're choosing to aspire to things that make you happy and give you great joy. And that can be anything. I'm not a very materialistic person, so very basic things make me happy. And that's sort of how I have reinvented how I feel about life.
Or just another phase in the journey. And I'm looking at you today across from the microphone. You look so elegant. You look lovely.
Oh, thank you, Louise.
No, you do, honestly. And I think you always have been for me in the years that we've known each other. And we don't see each other all the time. Listeners, we do not see each other all the time. We catch up maybe every 6 months or so. You've always been an inspiration to me because I think you've always been a woman of authenticity, genuineness, kindness, respect for others and consideration, but you've always also been very, very respectful to yourself. Now, I might not always have seen, and I never will have seen, in fact, the bad times that you've gone through, but what you offer to us all who see your life now is elegance, kindness, respect and consideration for others. And I think that it's something that I think we should all to aspire to. And it doesn't matter whether you've gone through terrible grief or whatever it is. Let's be women who are able to sit up straight in the chair, look at each other in the eye when we're actually saying, this is what we are.
I think that's really important and motivated me to talk to you because I'm 64. There's many people who experience great tragedy and grief in their lives, but they don't always manage to work through to another level of life they can live in that brings them joy. So the message from my perspective is it is possible without disrespecting the people you've lost to be happy again. Choose things that make you happy every day. You're not meant to be happy every day, but if you think about it, I like to think about in the morning now, what am I going to do today that's going to make me happy? And if I achieve that, terrific. If I don't, then have another go tomorrow. Interestingly, my mother, as I said, is 87. She's obviously lost her two daughters and her husband. She lost a number of years ago. And she has always modelled getting on with things and just making sure that you're doing the best. And I think that's just fundamentally all you can do as a woman and as a human. Be respectful to other people, be kind, and enjoy your day because they could be all over very quickly and you're gone. Just for those people who have lost children and have other children, I believe passionately you have a duty to be happy for those other children because their lives should not be ruined or unhappy because they're looking at you being unhappy. And I'm in a situation, my children watch me very keenly because they obviously love me and they know that I'm going through very difficult days with my husband, and they're also watching their father slowly die almost in front of them. So I have to be strong because, you know, I love my children and my grandchildren.
Well, to my listeners, I think we've just heard the essence of elegance and joy for life. Thank you so much, Michelle Ebbs, for joining me today. I'm really, really grateful.
My pleasure, always.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Your time and attention are greatly appreciated, and I hope you've found our discussion both enlightening and inspiring. If you've enjoyed our conversation and want to stay connected with us on this journey of elegance and refinement, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favourite podcast platforms. And why not share the wisdom with your friends and family? Etiquette is best enjoyed when it's a shared experience, after all. And for all the latest updates, behind-the-scenes moments, and exclusive content, be sure to follow the Percy Institute on Facebook and Instagram. And please also do join my Facebook group. It's called The Elegance Club, and you'll get exclusive offers and bonuses. Remember, the pursuit of a more elegant life is a continuous journey, and I'm delighted to share your journey. Feedback and engagement mean the world to me here, so please keep those comments, questions, and suggestions coming. I love hearing from you. So until next time, my dear listeners, stay graceful, stay kind, and may your life be filled with elegance and joy. Thank you for being a part of Manners and Other Matters. Goodbye for now.